The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. Hello, this is Nicole Hunter from the Triangle Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine, July and August 2018 edition. And so on the cover is Janet Jackson, and let's go ahead and get started with the cover story. So in Essence exclusive, Janet Jackson pens a revealing message to Black women about her search to find, enjoy, and sustain happiness. Letter from my heart. My dear Essence sisters, we've been together a long, long time. And I'm so very grateful for our deep connection. We've grown up together. We've laughed and cried, sung and danced together. You've seen me face my challenges, and I've seen you face yours. As a precious sisterhood, we've been there for each other. I thank you for your loyalty. You must also know I couldn't still be going strong without your support. When it comes to happiness, I'm no expert. I have only my life experience as a guide. I've known great happiness and great sadness. But I guess the key question is, what do I really know about happiness? In order to answer this question, honestly, let me review my life to see what I've learned over the years. In my childhood, I was happy when my brothers came home from performing on the road. I was happy when my mother lavished me with love, but I wasn't happy with the way I looked. For most of my life, that lack of happiness has followed me. I wish someone had said, "You look fine. You look healthy." Being a little chubby is the least important thing in the world. Enjoy your childhood. Enjoy running and laughing and playing. Stop looking in the mirror and comparing yourself to others. When you compare yourself to others, you always wind up with the short end of the stick. In my teens, happiness came when people asked me to perform. It felt good to be chosen like a director or a producer. But I wasn't happy when I was pleasing others and not myself. An older and wiser Janet might have said, "True happiness is knowing you're doing the best you can. True happiness comes when you realize you'll never be perfect. Beware of perfectionism. Perfectionism is a prescription of misery." In my 20s, when I found my voice as an artist, I was definitely happy. I had hit records, and I developed a group of fans who would stick with me over the years. Those fans and their beautiful loyalty mean everything. Still, feelings of unworthiness haunted me. I had not rooted out the damage done by perfectionism. I was still comparing myself to others. If someone had said compare means despair, I might have listened. If someone had said be happy in the now, that might have made all the difference in the world. In my 30s, I was happy with my growth as an artist. I was happy to write and sing about life experiences, like sensual pleasure and non-material matters, like faith, with less self-consciousness. I've always tried to deepen my faith. I was happy that while I might not have found a spiritual solution to my problems, I was on a spiritual path. I read somewhere it's not about the destination, but the journey. Deep down, I may have known that true happiness is not in the accomplishment, but in the learning process leading to the accomplishment. Yet I still had not embraced this idea. It was an abstract concept, not an emotional reality. These were years, or difficult years, when I struggled with depression. The struggle was intense. I could analyze the source of my depression forever. Low self-esteem might be rooted in childhood feelings of inferiority. It could relate to failing to meet impossibly high standards. And of course, there are always the societal issues of racism and sexism. Put it all together, and depression is a tenacious and scary condition. Thankfully, I found my way through it. In my 40s, like millions of women in the world, I still heard voices inside my head berating me, voices questioning my value. Happiness was elusive. A reunion with old friends might make me happy. A call from a colleague might make me happy. But because sometimes I saw my failed relationships as a fault, I easily fell into despair. These were times when I did, in fact, have wise counsel. Happiness doesn't depend on the success of your relationship with others, said one friend. It depends on your relationship with yourself and with God. God's love is always present. Our job isn't to question it. Our job isn't to ask ourselves whether we're worthy of God's love, because we are. Our job is to simply and fully embrace God's love. Today at 52, happiness has much to do with my work. Hard work, focused work, positive work makes me happy. I'm blessed to be surrounded by a troop of musicians and young dancers. A few from the J Tribe were photographed with me for this story, who inspire me with their creative energy. I'm inspired by the commitment of young people on justice causes. A new age is upon us. When high school students are speaking on a vital social issues and boldness and courage. And I'm honored to be part of a legacy of African-American women who have unapologetically focused on an artistic expression of their pain and joy. We are living at a time in history when women all over the world are refusing to be controlled, manipulated, exploited, or abused. Heart and soul, I stand with these women. We have found our strength, and we will not relent. Happiness is also realizing that as African-American women, our proud heritage is one of the moral courage and brilliance. We have guided, protected, and nurtured our children. We have been the backbone of our families. We have endured and we have prevailed. We are indomitable. Most important, I have found happiness in my relationship with myself and God. That happiness is grounded in the moment. Today, happiness means being present, feeling the love of those surrounding me, feeling the love of those rooting for me, feeling the ocean breeze as I walk through the beach, smelling the fragrance of the flowers growing in my spiritual garden, appreciating the awesome blaze of the setting sun, reflecting on the wisdom of a book I'm reading, relishing the new songs I'm writing, treasuring the new friends I'm making, seeking out such moments, and when I find them, letting them linger, acknowledging their glory, expressing gratitude that every day offers opportunities, even if they last only a few seconds, for beauty to enter and enrich my consciousness. Now, the height of happiness is holding my baby son in my arms and hearing him coo. Or when I look into his smiling eyes and watch him respond to my tenderness. When I kiss him, when I sing him softly to sleep. During those sacred times, happiness is everywhere. Happiness is in gratitude to God. Happiness is saying, thank you, God, for my life, my energy, and my capacity to grow in love. Your sister, Janet Jackson. So let's move on to another article. And this article is from the issue side report, A Crisis of Deception. So as the threat of reproductive care centers swells, another danger has reared its ugly head, fake clinics. So in December 2013, Dartricia Rollins had a hunch that she might be pregnant. Quote, I went to apply for Medicaid and they gave me a list of places I could go to get free pregnancy tests. Or get a free pregnancy test. Because obviously, if you don't have health insurance, you more likely don't have a doctor, and more than likely, you can't afford to pay for a blood test, she says. She was only 22 years old, a freshman majoring in psychology at Atlanta Metropolitan State College. On the list was a pregnancy services center in Marietta, Georgia, which was located close to her home in the suburbs of Atlanta. Dewan, my boyfriend at the time, he's now my husband, looked them up online. We didn't see anything alarming. We called and scheduled an appointment for later that weekend, she recalls. Rollins walked into a well-lit facility with staff members in medical scrubs. She provided me with her medical records, her driver's license, her social security number, and a urine sample, and was immediately called in to see a counselor to talk about her pregnancy. Rollins believed that the staff who served her, including the person who had conducted her ultrasound, had medical backgrounds. She was likely wrong. She assumed that they were there strictly to provide medical services. She was probably wrong with that, too. Fake clinics. Rollins has learned since then that she had entered one of the so-called crisis pregnancy centers, or CPCs, which have been around since Roe versus Wade and are linked to deceptive efforts to confuse women who are seeking reproductive services, such as prenatal care, birth control, and abortions. They may give a woman an ultrasound, but they also counsel her against abortion and in some cases it even discourage birth control, according to some reports. By some estimates, there are nearly 3,000 of these fake clinics across the United States. Adrienne Kimmel, NARAL, or N-A-R-A-L, Pro-Choice America's Vice President of Communication, says these crisis centers are intentionally positioning themselves in or around black neighborhoods. These are folks who often go into communities where there are a high number of women of color, including black women, she says. They use billboards targeting black women. Melissa Grant, Chief Operating Officer of Carafing, a nonprofit women's health organization or healthcare organization with clinics in Washington, D.C. and Atlanta, says some are buying advertising on black television, and we know anti-choice organizations have used online target advertising where black women and Latinas are clicking. Instead of working to address the full cadre of social issues surrounding unintended pregnancies, the CPCs are focused on eliminating options. That's not treating the problem. You can't isolate abortion from other social justice and human rights issues, Grant says. Shamed for sex. When she was 16, Jessica Estes walked into a birthright location in St. Louis, believing she'd be able to get a pregnancy test and medical help. Instead, she says she found herself sitting opposite an older white woman who tried to humiliate her for having sex. At 16, I am carrying everybody's shame about the situation anyway, and I am nervous and worried. She was an adult. I grew up in a family of Southern Baptists who converted to Catholicism. I respected adults, she says. I didn't feel like I could say, I don't like what you're saying to me. I just sat there and let her berate me. Now 30, Estes is a statewide organizer at NARAL, a nonprofit that mobilizes to protect reproductive freedom. Estes says these places take advantage of women during a vulnerable moment in their life, using deceptive websites and dishonest advertising. She often sees the ads on the sides of buses or billboards in black neighborhoods where she lives. She also hears them on black radio stations. They say, "We offer free ultrasounds and free pregnancy tests and free health care." They ask things like, "Are you pregnant and scared?" It's usually a woman on a billboard looking sad. They are advertising to people like me at age 16 who don't know what to do or where to turn. It's a great marketing plan, and it works, she says. The problem is that they often don't provide what they advertise. In fact, according to Estes, the staff is trained to deflect when women inquire about their reproductive health care options. A federal case. The ambiguity is at the heart of the NIFLA versus Becerra, a U.S. Supreme Court case that began oral arguments on March the 20th of this year. The National Institute of Family and Life Advocates, also known as NIFLA, an anti-abortion organization that operates hundreds of CPCs, is suing the state of California and Xavier Becerra, the state's attorney general, to stop the enforcement of the state's reproductive fact, Freedom, Accountability, Comprehensive Care, and Transparency Act. Many believe Justice Neil Gorsuch, a Trump appointee, will rule in favor of anti-abortion groups. According to experts, the decision could set a precedent for women's rights for years to come. The California law was designed to prevent women from being deceived when searching for reproductive services. It mandates that facilities that provide family planning services make clear their stance on abortion and whether they have a licensed medical professional running the facility. It also requires a full disclosure from centers that advertise that they provide a range of pregnancy-related services, including abortion, but are really there to encourage women to have their babies. Lawyers for the centers claim that California's forcing them to post disclosure signs that tell clients abortion is an available option is a violation of their freedom of speech. The CPCs argue the state's requirement has an unmistakable advocacy component and is forcing them to provide a message that goes totally against their purpose. In a statement on its website, NIFLA's president, Thomas Glessner, says thousands of centers have provided compassionate care to millions of vulnerable women, run by profile nurses, doctors, and other employees, as well as volunteers. These privately funded organizations provide free ultrasounds, counseling, education, adoptions, maternity housing, and more. According to Grant, taxpayers are also paying for these fake clinics. For example, she says the Department of Health and Human Services has diverted millions of dollars from family planning programs such as birth control services, breast exams, and STD testing to abstinence programs in the crisis pregnancy centers. That's just on the federal level, according to Grant. States like Texas and Pennsylvania have poured a significant portion of their budgets into CPCs, which far outright outnumber abortion clinics. Grant says, for example, there are 79 CPCs in the state of Georgia and 13 abortion clinics there. Just like a clinic, Maureen Zink, executive director of Birthright Counseling in St. Louis, says the four centers in the city are privately owned. "We get no government money. We try to veer away from those fake clinics. We are not a medical clinic, and we make that clear. However, I am and all of my counselors are licensed social workers." Back when Jessica Estes entered a Birthright center, she claims she had no reasons to suspect she wasn't walking into a medical clinic. "You walk in and it looks like an other waiting room at an other clinic. They grab me to give to give them a urine sample. It wasn't until I was in the examination room alone with the older white woman that things started to get a little more intense. She didn't tell me right away that I wasn't pregnant. She just went on and on, kind of shaming me about being sexually active and not being married. When she was done with her rant, she told me, "You're not pregnant." But Estes was. It could have been that it was too early for them to know. It could have been a false negative. It could have been that they lied to me. I am never going to know, Estes says. Ultimately, she went on to have a son who is now 14. We hate to hear someone felt deceived coming to birthright, Zink says. We make clear we don't do abortions. We tell them if you want to go through your pregnancy, we are here. We have resources. We are the opposite side of the choice. Dangerous situation. Yashika Robinson, MD, who runs both a large medical practice and a health clinic that offers abortion in Huntsville, Alabama, says the CPCs are so integrated in the medical system that patients often believe they have to get referrals from them before coming to see her. The CPC's goal is to capture those abortion-minded people so that if that means they will have to lie, then they will do that, she says. Although some crisis pregnancy centers hire legitimate medical experts, Robinson says, many do not, which can create a big problem. When counselors at the clinics don't have medical training, a woman can get misinformed, such as an incorrect due date, which will delay visits with a prenatal doctor. Some are told they are not pregnant at all and that they are earlier than they really are and must come back over and over. This can be dangerous to women because most are not aware of these are not real clinics, Robinson says. They may think these visits, such as prenatal care, the centers can get away with it because they are practicing free speech and offering free services, she says. In a letter to state legislators, Dartricia Rollins, who is now 26, explained that the deception was more than frustrating for her. She believes it was fatal to her unborn child. Although Rollins and her boyfriend told the counselor at the center that they wanted to keep their child if they were pregnant, the counselor spent hours trying to persuade them not to get an abortion, scolding them about their sex life and their lack of religion, and trying to persuade them to get married. I came in for an ultrasound, but instead I was subjected to hours of invasive questions about my sexual and religious life. Instead of being told about prenatal care, I received hours of hurtful comments about how my loving boyfriend could never be a good father unless he had the same religious beliefs as the people in the center, Rollins wrote in her letter. We ended up leaving crushed and frustrated. We both respected the counselor's religious beliefs, but I was there for medical care and medical care only. And I am hurt and angered by the fact that convincing my boyfriend to attend church was more important to her than making sure I had the information I needed to have a healthy pregnancy and a healthy baby. And the consequences of that are fatal. Before leaving the clinic, Rollins was given an ultrasound and was then told she was in the earliest stages of her pregnancy. 2 months later, she visited a doctor who told her she was actually much further along. On March the 12th, 2014, Rollins began cramping and bleeding at work. She called her doctor, who told her to head to a nearby hospital. I found out that day that I had an incompetent cervix, she notes. But because I came to him later than normal due to misinformation, I'd received earlier in my pregnancy, I did not have the proper procedure to confirm this condition and treat it, resulting in the loss of my baby. I did not have the proper procedure to confirm this condition and treat it, Roland tried to forget what happened. I was sad about it for a long time, and I just let it go. I was in the middle of midterms, and I just tried not to think about that again. She doesn't know if she or her husband, Dewan, will ever get over the loss or the deception. My friend asked, do you think that is why you are afraid to have a baby now? And it totally is. We have been trying to make sure everything is perfect, that our health is perfect, that we have health insurance. Plenty of our friends say people can get pregnant at any time. You shouldn't worry too much. But I need to worry. I need to be sure of the doctor. I need to be sure I never go to one of these places again. Let's move on to a much lighter story. I don't know if this is going to be too much lighter, but it involves managing debt. So it's, you know, certainly helpful. If you run into trouble, know the facts. If your student loan becomes 90 days past due, then credit reporting agencies will be alerted. If you go 270 days past due, then you will default. A recent study estimates that nearly 40%, of students who took out loans in 2004 may default by 2023. Black graduates with bachelor's degrees are five times as likely to do this as white graduates. The impact can be long-lasting, says Jeremy Wine, a student loan supervisor for Take Charge America, a nonprofit student loan counseling agency in Phoenix. Not only will the action stay on your credit report for up to 7 years, possibly affecting your ability to buy a house or get a low interest rate on a car, but also your wages can be garnished, Wines said. Or adds, at least 20 states have enacted laws suspending your professional or driver's license if you default. So you need to take control. If you default, you can have your loan rehabilitated by making 9 on-time payments over 10 months. Or you can consolidate what you owe into a new loan. And then be proactive. If you're delinquent, contact your loan servicer. With federal loans, you can temporarily stop payments with a deferment or reduce them with a forbearance. A certified nonprofit student loan counselor can also help you to explore the options. So if you got debt, follow these 3 rules of thumb. Employ a holistic approach. Don't ignore other financial priorities. A financial pro with you can contribute to 401k plan and your emergency fund. Number 2, pay more than the minimum. Jamila Soffert, age 35, a Brooklyn graduate in 2005, with $25,000 in loans. She initially made a minimum payments, but quickly realized that if I didn't create a plan to pay off the loans, I would be paying the minimum on them for the rest of my life. And then finally, use tech to your advantage. And we're going to stop right here because it looks like that we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence Magazine. We sure that you have enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Nicole Hunter, reading for the Triangle Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you.